Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Excited right now to get to the BetQL guest line. Welcome in our guest, Mr. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus fame, started his own podcast, Check the Mic. Him and Sam Monson, two good dudes, doing it with the 33rd team. Steve, what up, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Obviously the conversation here in Washington centers around Jaden Daniels, but the big news yesterday was this trade of Jahan Dotson. As you look at this thing, what'd you make of the move?
Yeah, I mean, I know the reports out of camp were that he was, you know, Dotson was not necessarily, getting opportunities or, you know, in favor with the new staff or whatever it might be. I did think, you know, I still think Dotson's a good player, you know, maybe not where he was drafted in the first round, but, you know, showed flashes early on. I thought he could fit as a slot receiver here. I think, for this season, it puts a little more pressure, obviously, on De'Ami Brown and Zacchaeus and maybe Luke McCaffrey as a rookie. And it challenges the depth at wide receiver, where, you know, Terry McLaurin, of course, being the true number one, and then trying to figure out those pieces around them. So, again, I thought Dotson would at least be good enough to, you know, be the contributor, you know, still be looking for an upgrade, still be dreaming of a Brandon Ayuk coming in. But I was a little surprised by the trade. But again, it just moves everybody up a peg and puts a little bit more pressure on that next group of receivers.
It's going to be interesting. I mean, I've watched De'Ami Brown since they drafted him, right? I've watched him in practice. I've watched him in preseason. I've watched him in training camp. I've watched him look good on the practice fields in Ashburn. And then I've also watched that not translate to the field when they play real games. I kind of look at Nico Collins as how much he exploded once they got C.J. Stroud, but Collins was at least somewhat productive, you know, like 450 yards-ish productive. Is there any real track record of a guy that has had really minimal production? Like, we're talking 10, 12 catches a season to then bust out to like a 40 catch, 600 yard season?
I don't know off the top of my head.
You can't think of one, right?
Here's what I'm intrigued by. Not so much this is great for the Commanders, but the storyline of when you see a guy that has a couple years of development and, you know, not as a starter, you know, as a backup, and then he gets entrusted. And can he make that move? Or is the coaching staff seeing something in De'Ami Brown that the previous regime did not? Or are they going to use his skill set in a certain way? Obviously, I think, you know, what he did at UNC and what he, you know, showed in the preseason, his ability to be a downfield threat, I think is intriguing. You know, to be a vertical threat, I think it's a matter of that consistency, though. He's always been, had that big playability. The way he's been used is, you know, let's chuck it deep to De'Ami, see if we can flip the field with him. You know, if that's going to be his main role, I think he can do it. But again, you can't just rely on that. So it's intriguing from a, hey, let's see if year four of development, after sitting as a backup, can actually, you know, do him some good and see if he can develop some of that consistency.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch. What do you think of Jaden Daniels from what the little bit we've seen so far and just kind of how you expected him to play based on a fantastic college career?
I think it's as advertised. When you heard people talking around the league, and when Jaden really made his rise up to number two on a lot of people's draft boards behind Caleb Williams, a lot of people said the same thing. Like, oh, but, you know, he's a great runner and he was outstanding at LSU, but he wants to sit in the pocket, make throws, go through reads. He's really balanced and athletic in the pocket. I like to separate pocket athleticism from outside of the pocket athleticism, and his pocket athleticism is fantastic. And I think you've seen a lot of that. He looks very comfortable. He's been accurate throwing the ball outside the numbers for the most part. The thing I'm curious about with Daniels and of course with Cliff Kingsbury, you know, Cliff hasn't attacked the middle of the field historically a ton, but he also had Kyler Murray. And so trying to figure out if the Kyler thing, if that's an air raid thing, because they had the pop pass to the tight end last week, but that was pretty much it as far as in between the numbers. It's going to be intriguing to see how this offense evolves. But Daniels, I always look for comfort level from the rookies once they hit the field. He looks very comfortable, looks like he belongs, and I think it's something to build upon heading into the regular season.
What do you think? So one, I mean, you know how this world works. Like, I think social media and fans kind of tend to overreact. It was actually pretty interesting. Cliff got asked about this yesterday. You know, how much of his offense has he shown? And he said, not much. Jaden's had 15 passes in the preseason, right? What do you think? Cliff also explained that he is night and day different than what it was when he first came into the league with Kyler. His offense, his mindset, all of this. What do you think of the marriage between Cliff and Jaden?
Yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued to see what that looks like from Cliff, because it is easy for us to only know what we see, which is, okay, here's what happened in Arizona, here's what he did, and we'll assume the same thing. But we're all allowed to change and evolve, and I think the marriage with Daniels is a good one, because there was a point in Kyler Murray's time at Arizona when he was not used in the design run game a ton as a runner, and then they kind of flipped that switch. And I forget how much, it was like 600 or 800 yards that Kyler Murray had one of those years. And it was like, oh, we can lean into this. Kyler Murray can do this. I mean, Daniels obviously has that. Now he has to still have to work on sliding, still have to work on not, taking those big hits. But I'm intrigued by that piece as well, because even if you're going to be a pocket first quarterback, win from the pocket first, that added dimension of the design running game, what that does for play action and what that does to just keep the defense in a bind. I'm interested to see what that looks like, and interested to see how Cliff evolves. I think people focus too much on, well, Terry McLaurin's only lining up on the left, and we don't use motion, and we do this and that. And even though I generally like the idea of moving guys around for mismatches and creating motion mismatches and advantages for the offense, there have been offenses that have been good who don't rely upon that. Aaron Rodgers' offenses through the years, a lot more static. Peyton Manning's offenses back in the day, very static. It's not so it doesn't always mean more success. So I'm interested to see how that all looks. But I think the fit for Kingsbury and Daniels is very good so far, and I think it will continue to be.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. We're talking with Steve Palazzolo here. Check out the Check the Mic podcast, YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. Give him a follow at Steve Palazzolo, PALAZZOLO with the underscore at the end. I also think you lose Dotson, who showed real stuff as a rookie. Last year took a step back. I don't know about the rest of this receiver room after Terry, but I think Eckler has looked fantastic. I think Zach Ertz has looked fantastic. And I think Brian Robinson is a heck of a player. How can you maybe build a offense that moves the ball well? It's been brief, but in three drives with Jaden Daniels at the helm in preseason, they had a scoring opportunity every time. They scored a touchdown, a field goal, and missed a field goal in his three drives. Can you build an offense that moves the ball well? Maybe it's a top 10, top 12 yardage offense that isn't reliant on chunk plays anymore.
I mean, the Chiefs have done it. It sounds crazy to say the Chiefs.
I know.
Spend them the last couple of years. They're not flipping the field. Patrick Mahomes had the second worst passer rating on 20 plus yard throws in the entire NFL last year, like 37th out of 38 quarterbacks.
That's crazy.
I think it's possible, and it's also trending with that's how defenses are playing, right? Defenses are playing more too high shells, which means they're keeping safety back, and they're saying, go ahead, put together a 10 or 12 play drive, and be patient. Show that you can take the underneath stuff. Run the ball against a lighter box and pick up four or five and be patient and don't force the ball down the field. I think the NFL defenses are trending that way, forcing offenses to live that life. And then when they get, it's kind of like an old school Belichick defense. Belichick, teams would move the ball between the 20s all the time, and then he'd crack down in the red zone. And it seems like a lot of NFL defenses, oversimplifying, but are saying the same thing, like, hey, be patient, take the short stuff, and then we'll crack down in the red zone and, force three instead of seven. So I think it is possible. It takes that patience. But I also think with Jaden Daniels being such a good deep ball thrower and, probably the best downfield thrower that Terry McLaurin has had and, Deami Brown's downfield ability, it'll be interesting to see Washington have that type of offense with Ertz and Eckler, working the underneath game and, the running game that they'll have with Robinson and Eckler, but I think they have a chance to have an explosive offense because of Daniel's ability to throw the ball down the field.
Well, dude, I also wonder, I mean, not to go back to De'Ami Brown, but De'Ami's best asset is his verticality, and they haven't really had a quarterback to test it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it'd be pretty cool if maybe that's a reason why this will hit. I don't know. We'll see. But I did want to go kind of around the league with you while I've got you. What kind of team, just overall with Washington, do you think they have a chance at like a worst to first kind of Houston scenario here?
Yeah, I mean, the only issue is the Cowboys and the Eagles being in that division, right? You know, yeah. The Texans had the benefit of Jaguars collapse last year and the Colts maybe not having Anthony Richardson. Washington does seem like the team. Again, this is dependent on Jaden Daniels being as advertised, you know, to have that very surprise season. And then when you look at from a team building effort, a lot of their moves were short-term moves, you know, bringing in Bobby Wagner and, bringing in a whole bunch of veterans to kind of fill those gaps, you know, along the roster on both sides of the ball. There's this mix of, hey, we want to rebuild. We need to build through the draft. And I love what they did in the draft. I don't think they forced needs in the draft. They drafted a lot of the best players that weren't necessarily needs, like Johnny Newton, Mike Sandrastill. I love the way they did that. So they had a long-term vision in the draft.
Sandrastill is a short-term vision, dude. Watching him every day, he is a dog.
Yeah. He is that, like, as soon as you draft it, I predicted Jim Harbaugh was absolutely going to draft him because I'm like, he has to be Jim Harbaugh's favorite player, right? He has to be. But he'll be every fan's favorite player. He's every Michigan fan's favorite player. He just flies around the field. One of those, you know, nickel players that that just does a lot, right, and brings that energy to the defense. So I like the mix that Washington had, right? Long-term in the draft, a lot of picks, you know, stuck to their guns as far as their board went. At least it seemed like that. But then the Bobby Wagners of the world and Jeremy Chins of the world and some of those, you know, let's make sure we're putting out a good group of starters here as well. So that's what I think. If that meshes Washington, and then, of course, Jaden Daniels hits the ground running, all of a sudden I think you're surprising some teams. It'll be tough to, unless the Eagles are in collapse mode again, as they were last year, I think it'll be tough to leapfrog the Eagles or the Cowboys, but I definitely think Washington can do some damage.
Yeah, I mean, if things break right, now that you got, you know, seven playoff teams, it's almost like the league is almost designed so everybody has a chance at it in a way. If you kind of continue to zoom out, Philly and Dallas look like the class of the NFC East. But how about this? This is a interesting way to look at it. If you had to predict today, and it's impossible to predict on August 23rd, your AFC title game and NFC title game, who are kind of those teams you think get to the final four, if you will?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Chiefs make it to the AFC title game this year.
Right.
Just really like the way they're looking this preseason. Somebody's got to dethrone the Chiefs. I'm kind of in on the Bengals this year because I think we kind of forget how good Joe Burrow's been when he's healthy. Right. I'll assume health for him. But it's another loaded AFC, you know, the Bills, the Ravens. The whole AFC North is pretty strong. I'll say Bengals Chiefs in the NFC, in the AFC. I love where the Lions are. I don't think the Lions are going to have a setback this year. I think they did a really nice job this offseason continuing to get better, you know, shoring up their defensive line, attacking the secondary that had some issues last year. So I'll say Lions. And I think the Eagles do bounce back. I've never seen a team collapse the way they did last year. They looked like the best team in the NFL through 10 or 11 weeks. And then literally one of the worst teams in the NFL after that point, including the playoff game where they got destroyed, right? I've never seen anything like it. They're changing defensive coordinators, changing play callers. There's inner turmoil, and good players look like they age 10 years in a matter of weeks. I'm going to assume that's not going to happen this year and that their coordinator changes do help them. So I'll say Eagles, Lions, and then Bengals, Chiefs as far as the title games go.
Interesting. You can make the case for all those teams, right? You did not include San Fran. And San Fran has been a freight train. They got a lot going on out there. You got Trent holding out or in, whatever that situation is. McCaffrey with this calf strain. The Ayuk drama. What do you make of the Niners?
Yeah. I may have just forgotten them as I'm listing those teams. But, yeah, hey, look, they have first world problems. They're too good. I mean, they literally have a top two tight end, the best running back, the best fullback. a top five receiver, the best wide receiver running back hybrid in Deebo Samuel, top five edge, best left tackle. They have the best of everything, or top five everything. And so I think he'll still be good. Kyle Shanahan is still an offensive play calling cheat code. I know the questions in the playoffs and in crunch time and everything, but Shanahan has, you know, over a decade of experience elevating offenses. And I'll tell you what, I'm intrigued by Brock Purdy in year three. You know, I always try to balance things. You know, last year when he has 120 passer rating or whatever it was, it's like, whoa, he's not that good. But because of all the playmakers and everything, but he's also not just a system quarterback. He's also taken Shanahan's offense and elevated it more than any quarterback since Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan won the MVP in 2016 under Kyle Shanahan. So Purdy has a chance in year three, by the way, to improve. He was a seventh round pick. He's getting stronger, maybe adds a little bit more velocity. So yeah, they'll be as dangerous as ever. It's just a matter right now of more than X's and O's, it's personalities and keeping guys happy and getting everybody pointing toward the same goal in San Francisco.
Yeah, man. What do you think about the Ayuk trade specifically? You think anything's happening, or like by the time we finally get to week one, he's just wearing a Niners uniform?
He's probably wearing a Niners uniform. I don't understand what the holdup is. You know, there's so much back and forth as far as the negotiations go. And look, they're going to have to pay Brock Purdy a big number that probably starts with a six a year from now, unless he...
That's crazy, dude.
Right? I mean, unless he completely collapses this year, He's probably in that $55, $60 million range a year from now. So I think they need to figure out the accounting. How do you keep all those great players? Right now, it's easy. Brock Purdy's got the most valuable contract in the NFL, basically, worth, you know, last pick in the draft and adding so much value as a starter. So I think that's what they're trying to figure out is the, you know, the terms, the accounting to keep everybody on the field a year from now. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge there. But I think ultimately Ayuk ends up back there and we're looking at a loaded Niners team for 24 here.
Yeah. I mean, they are loaded. They might have the best player in football at like three different positions, which is asinine. Yeah. Maybe four, dude. I think you could even include Warner if you want to go like Bosa, Trent, McCaffrey.
Oh, I got Warner, yeah.
Jeez.
Best linebacker, best fullback, Kyle Juszczyk.
Yeah.
They got it all.
Yo, I mean, you could almost argue Kittle. Kelsey's regular season, anyway, last year wasn't as good.
Yeah.
Steve, I have followed your work for years at PFF. I think it's really cool you and Sam are branching out, starting your own thing. Tell us more about the Check the Mic podcast.
Yeah, it was. I appreciate it, by the way. I mean, we both had a great run at PFF. I was there 13 years, I think, this week. But we had a great opportunity to start our own podcast. It's a lot of the same content, but it's called Check the Mic. And, you know, our fans have always enjoyed our long form analysis. So we go 2.5 hours on Monday morning viewing every game. Right. It is long, right? We used to have people say, oh, keep it to an hour and a half. Like, no, we're giving every team their love. So we're going for 2.5 hours on a Monday, 2 hours on a Thursday, previewing all the games. And, hope people come join us and continue with a lot of same content. Check the Mic wherever you listen to your podcast. And then, you know, same thing on YouTube, Check the Mic.
Cool, man. Everybody should check it out. Check the Mic. I like the little play on words there. Steve, thank you for the time, man. I appreciate you joining us. Maybe we can keep doing it as the season goes on.
Yeah, I'm down. Appreciate it.
All right, great. Everybody check out Check the Mic. Give Steve a follow at Steve Palazzolo.